Hello there, everybody, and welcome to the Lion of Vienna Suite podcast, episode 67. My name is Dan Murphy, and joining me on this episode, the first one in quite a while, apologies for that, but beer eating it. For joining me, as he usually does these days, it's Mr. Chris Manning. Chris, how are you?
I'm fine, Dan, thank you. It's very nice to be back on the podcast. You find me in a bit of a state of wrestling-induced shock, having just witnessed the seismic events at the end of sort of Survivor Series.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll do my best.
However, Bray Wyatt,
I don't know. I was talking more about Carmella getting knocked out first, my friend. It really knocked me sideways.
Absolute joke, an absolute travesty, one would say. So, got a couple of... Also, joining me, Chris, got a couple of special guests. And so, first up, on his first ever appearance on the Line of the Street podcast, is a writer from the old Trotter blog website. It's Mr. Jimmy Donnelly. So, Jimmy, how are you?
Good evening, chaps. Very well. I've torn myself away from the big white telephone, thanks to my missus's cooking. But all well for now.
Sweet, sweet. Do you want to the uninitiated, do you want to explain just who you are and why you're on our humble abode over here?
I've been writing for Trotter's blog for coming on a year in January. Liam Hatton runs the site. He's had me writing for him for about a year. Been chatting with Chris for the past few weeks or so, and he's good enough to invite me on, so here I am.
We always like to get a wide variation of opinions here on the Love Pod, and none are more valued than our final guest this evening. It is, of course, the chief football writer over at the Bolton News. It is Mr. Mark Isles. Mark, how are you?
Wonderful, wonderful. Freezing me breasts off this afternoon at that training ground. Absolutely below zero. But I got a cup of soup out of it, so such is life.
Every cloud, as they say.
What can you ask for?
And at least you didn't get caught in a monsoon in Sheffield today. And with Sheffield's tendency to flood, I may not be here tomorrow. So that is good. Anyway... Bolton Wanderers.
If you can just make sure the podcast gets posted, Dan, before you do, please. I mean, you do have responsibilities.
Yeah, I shall try my damnedest. As we were, Bolton Wanderers. Since it's been about four weeks, if not longer, since the last podcast, I think we haven't talked since we beat Bury 2-0 away. So there's been lots of games in the time since, as is with League One. So, in the meantime, let's have a quick run through. We beat Port Vale 3-1. We beat Grimsby in the FA Cup 1-0. That took our unbeaten streak to 8, when we then fucked it by losing to Cheltenham, and then losing to Peterborough in the league last week on telly. One of the few games I could actually watch, and we were god-awful. But, on the last Saturday they just went past, we clawed it back. The bad run of form didn't last nearly as long as the last one did, and we got another 2-0 victory against Millwall. So I don't know if there's anything of the first four games that you want to discuss, any of the from the victories or defeats before Saturday's game, anyone? Or we just jumped straight into the Millwall game? It's up to you, because I've seen any of them.
Yeah,
there's nothing to say about them. Especially not that Cheltenham game.
Oh. I was on holiday for the Port Vale one, and I chose to go to the Calvary instead of watching the Peterborough one. So I think I had the upper hand on all of those games.
Yeah, you really did. So I guess I presume everyone was at Millwall. So Chris, what was that game like? We looked quite comfortable from what I've seen. Josh scored a great goal. You may as well talk about that, and I'll fucking lean back for a bit. Have a chill out.
Yeah. You get that bucket ready to bail yourself out. It was great. I really enjoyed it. It was freezing cold, though. I mean, I hate being cold. And the stupid trainers that I've got. I've got like a mesh thing on the top, which lets all the cold air in. So, barring hypothermia developing through my toes, I really enjoyed it. It's been a long time that I can remember us dominating in such abundant form as we showed on Saturday. Every single player had a good game from top to bottom. It was a really, really good performance. And Millwall were really bad, really bad. I don't think I can quite make that as obvious as I can. Looking back, I wrote the preview for the website at the back end of the week, at Thursday, Friday, and I didn't realise that Millwall were in quite such good form as they were, but they showed absolutely none of that.
Were they just bad, or did we make them bad?
Oh, no, we were excellent. We were excellent. I mean, they had their flow disrupted quite early on. Now, Gregory, their main striker, went off injured.
Oh, that's...
So I don't know how much that affected their flow. but we were brilliant in midfield, especially. We didn't give them a minute on the ball, and that started from the attackers, from Medin, Clough, Velo and Amiobi pushing on. It really gave us an extra dimension because they didn't have any time on the ball to settle whatsoever. And so any hope they had of playing through our midfield was gone, because the first shield that we showed in front of the midfield two was absolutely rock solid. And I thought Parkinson tactically got it bob on. He's the way he set up with the personnel as well, absolutely no problems whatsoever from there. It was just an all-round great performance, and it gives us some real confidence going into tomorrow night against Coventry, when it's, judging from tonight's weather, it's due to be even colder. So wrap up warm, that's all I would say.
It sounds like that a lot of the intensity. Yeah, man, I cannot speak tonight. I've only just got back from Germany, so I'm still fucked. But seems like that a lot of the intensity, I still don't know if I pronounced that right, that we didn't have in the Peterborough defeat was kind of found again against Millwall, Jimmy. Would you kind of agree with that?
Yeah, it seemed like they'd had a rocket up them, certainly since Sunday. But echoing what Chris said, I think intensity is the good word, because I thought we played better football against Port Vale, and we looked like scoring more goals against Port Vale, but they looked stronger at the weekend against Millwall as a team all over. They just controlled absolutely everything from start to finish, and Millwall were absolute dross, but I don't think we gave them a chance to be anything else than that. So, like I say, we're brilliant against Port Vale, but I was more pleased with the performance on Saturday.
Mark, what was your assessment of the game? It sounds like everyone's just quite happy again, which is rare being a Bolton fan, or is it? Well, not so much these days, actually. It's just nice.
Pretty cold, though.
Yeah, it's a fair shout, isn't it? I agree with everybody else, really. I mean, it was a great performance, but I just felt that having Jay Spearing back in there, it just kept the midfield ticking over so well that the players just seemed to feed off it, and you know, the tempo was so much better than it was against Peterborough. And there are a few reasons for the Peterborough game. I think the preparation was a bit off. I think Parkinson said in the build up, and he's obviously looked to correct that. And I just thought, yeah, from the off, they were up for it. You know, the attitude was perfect, and there wasn't, you know, I don't think I gave lower than a 7 in my match ratings, which is incredibly rare, believe me. And you know, because they just deserved it. I just couldn't pick any faults. And people like Taylor, I couldn't really fault anything they'd done at all. It was just such a good performance, and you know, it had that kind of air of a team that was going to go and do something this season. If they can, you know, if they can replicate that one out of every three performances, I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, where, speaking of Andy Taylor, where has this player come from? Because Wigan fans were laughing when we signed him in the summer, and he's been brilliant every time I've seen him play.
Yeah, you know, he had time at Reading. I mean, what Wigan fans won't tell you is that whilst, I mean, you know, the whole team sucked, didn't they? As they got relegated under Rosler, but what happened with Taylor is he got bombed out over the summer, but actually just went out on loan back to the Championship and played for Reading for most of the season. So, whilst the Wigan fans might piss and moan about how badly he played for them, he just went and played for a pretty solid Championship club after that whilst they were playing in League One. So, I think he turned up having not had a good pre-season at all. I mean, Wigan had just left him completely alone to train alone, and it took him a while to get up to speed, but he really is that sort of solid type for me. He's got good character. I know it's a bit of a cliche, but he just seems like the sort that's not going to let you down too often.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not at his age now you can step up into the Championship and do the same job, I don't know. We'll have to see that kind of thing if and when that happens. But in League One level, he's the type, I think, that Bolton really need.
I know you're a big fan of him as well, Chris.
I'll be honest with you, I wasn't blown away until the weekend. I mean, he kind of lived up to the 6 out of 10 nickname that I was a lot of Wigan fans seem to give towards him. But I thought him and to jump forward a little bit, I thought Josh Vella both had probably the best games for Bolton on Saturday. Taylor was everywhere. He was brilliant. I was really worried before him because that on Yadima, as he called, the fast right winger they've got, from what I'd seen of Taylor, I was a bit concerned that he might have a few problems, but he dealt with him. He showed all his experience. He really did find it quite straightforward. And he was just as good going forward as he was at the back, and I thought it really was a really good, solid performance. And like Mark says, if Wigan fans think that they've sold us a dud, then I'm quite happy to have that kind of dud on our books.
Speaking of duds, have you heard about Bogdan? Cruciate.
Go on.
He got stretched off at the weekend to laughter from Wigan fans, and he's done his cruciate, the poor lad.
Oh dear, didn't know about that. That's a shame.
That's a bit of a career decline, isn't it? So, Chris, Josh Vella, you want to talk about him once the specs?
Yeah, I was really impressed. I mean, I've given him stick in the past year or so about his performances. I thought he was pretty poor, but in the last few weeks, he's been great. And on Saturday, like I said, he was our best player, in my opinion, and I think he had his best game for Bolton too, pushing forward. He spoke today, I think, in the Bolton Evening News, Mark, about how he's trying to press from the front, and I think that's really interesting, because I found sometimes when he played that holding role that he suffered maybe from a bit of a lack of pace, whereas up front he hasn't got as much ground to cover, and perhaps that lack of pace is masked a little bit, and so it utilises his strengths, which are his pressing, his on the ball ability, and we've seen this season that he can hit the ball. You know, I can barely remember him having a shot in the last 2 years, but this year I think he must be on 3 or 4 goals at least. I think it's a really good progression to his game, and it makes me think now back to the years that he might have been wasted perhaps at right back or in a defensive midfielder role, because he's really suiting this attacking position, most definitely, and long may that continue.
Who did?
I think he's got no place in the team as well, hasn't he? I think a lot of the time last season, particularly, he never really knew whether he was going to be playing holding midfield, whether he was pressing, whether he was playing right back. Mm. And, you know, as a character, I know he's a fairly quiet lad. He's not really one of the outspoken types, and he's quite insular. And I think he just, you know, tripping over his bottom lip a little bit, perhaps, at times in his Bolton career. And I just think that Parkinson's managed to bring something out of him. And he's looking more mature now. He's filling out as a player. He's found his niche in the team. And the confidence is turning into a much better, much more rounded player. So long may that continue.
Yeah, it looks like he belongs.
I think he's coming up to definitely, sorry, I think he's coming up to 100 appearances, I think, if he's not already just passed it. So I think you're right, Mark, his time's come now, hasn't he? He's filling out, he's 22, he's no longer a prospect, he should be a solid first pick, and it looks like he's found his natural position, which is great to see.
Yeah, he looks to be enjoying his football, which I've never really definitely seen Fowler play with a smile on his face before, but at the minute he's enjoying it, and obviously you work better when you're enjoying it, and defenders hate him because you just don't give him a minute.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for the first time in his Bolton career, he looks like he truly belongs in the team. He looks like, Mark said, he's got his place, he's got his role, he knows it, he's enjoying it. And it's great for us to see. I think similar can be said about Clough at the minute. I know he's playing more on the left, isn't he, at the minute, because it's like Vella in the middle with Sammy out wide. But that for a start, that whole track effector are just playing really, really well. I think Clough is even, he's always scoring goals freely again for the first time since he first stormed onto the scene. And I never liked him as an out wide player, but it seems like it kind of suits him in this team, doesn't it, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, I think straight from the off, he fancied Vella straight from the off, but in the summer, one of the first things he said was, I like this lad, I think he's got something about him. So it was clear he was going to get a run in the team. But with Clough, and with any of his wide men, I think at first he made a statement to me about wanting to get wide men into the team, and I think I interpreted that as, all right, we're going to get some wingers back. And a lot of fans are thinking, well, great stuff, we're going to get this width in the team again. But actually what he wants is these wide players that come in and cut in, and I think him and Amiobi both do that really well, and come in and cause problems for fullbacks, find these kind of little pockets of space. And Clough is intelligent enough. I think he's a clever lad. You know, he's got a bit of growing to do, and he's finding his way a little bit more on the kind of physical front now. But with this run in the team, this injury free run in the team, I think he'll get your goals definitely. For even from that left hand side.
Are you allowed to say Friedman's name on here?
Whispering.
It may be bleeped out, but yeah, say whatever you like.
If I'm right, I think Dougie Friedman had him playing on the left in the youth team. That was part of the reason there was a big hoo-ha about Dougie's attitude towards the kids, if I'm right. But I think what Parky's seen with Cluffy is, I think in the middle, in this division, even in the Championship, he's just getting clogged. And if he's playing with his back to goal, I think you take away half of his talent. I think by letting him drift in from wide, he's always going to be running at defenders instead of trying to turn them. And I think that just suits his game a lot better.
I think you're spot on there.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And I really like that quote you you put across, Mark, on Twitter from the journalist on the other side about how elusive he is. And I think that freedom being out wide, it allows him that rather than being constrained by being a central attacker, which for all Medine's faults, he provides that distraction, I think.
Well, a lot of the Oppo journos pick Clough out, even when he's had, I think, pretty average games. But it's just he's so good to look at. You know, he's a almost a pretty footballer, and there's not too much of that around in League One. But some of the little sublime little touches that he puts across, you might miss them in the general sort of scheme of play. But I think when you haven't seen that, and when you sort of cover League One footballers, as a lot of the other journos do, those little touches of class really sort of stand out, and a lot of the time they pick him out and say, Jesus, where's he come from? Why isn't he playing at a higher level? And I think, you know, eventually I think he will. How high, whether he's Premier League quality, I think you'll probably see in the next sort of 12, 18 months to see how he develops. But right now he's playing good football, as good a football as he has done for Bolton, and exactly... exactly what Jimmy just said there about finding those little pockets of space and not playing through the middle, which would be a mistake. I think a lot of people would like to see him, have said to me, like, you know, play two up front, play him alongside Medine, but I do think that'd be to his detriment. I think having that bank of three behind him has opened up a lot of different avenues for Bolton and a lot of different attacking avenues, and I think it's worked in their favour.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think it's just, for me, it's just, as someone who's not exactly been able to analyse every game to a T at the minute, it's just great to see Clough in the team on a consistent run, not getting injured all the time.
Yeah, I think it's good. I think Amiobi has been a bit of an unsung hero as well at the minute. I find when he first started that a lot of the preconceptions I had about Amiobi were coming true. You know, he seemed a bit slack, a bit half-assed. But in the last half a dozen games, it seems like a switch has been flicked with him. And I guess maybe it's... part of the realisation that he's coming to the end of his Newcastle contract, which means probably the end of his chance, realistically, of playing Premier League football. But the way he's taken his Bolton career by the scruff of his neck, especially in the last month, 6 weeks or so, I've been really impressed with it. And I know later on we're going to talk about who we might want to sign and so on. I think extending Amiobi's contract is really important to us. Whether we take him on at the end of the season, whether we can afford him or not, is another matter. But I think the defensive work he's been putting in lately has been impressive. Yeah. Not to mention what he does on the attack. I don't know what you think about that, Jimmy.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, when he first came, I was a bit thinking, oh, here we go, another fancy Dan who's flopped at a higher level, wears pink boots, and he's not going to do it in League One. And the first couple of games, like you say, that was kind of it. He'd go on a run, and then you wouldn't see him for 10 or 15 minutes, whereas Saturday he was doubling up on with his full-back. He was helping out. He was winning balls in the middle. And then he was the first one breaking when the keeper had the ball, which maybe he needs to be a big fish in a small pond. I don't know. Maybe, you know, if he does have a bit of ego about him, maybe this is helping him. But I think the big thing about him, Vella and Clough is I think they genuinely scare defences, and we've not had that for years. I mean, obviously we've dropped down a level, but people are scared when we get the ball. And if you can't man-mark Amiobi because then you're leaving Vella, you can't man-mark Vella because then you're leaving Clough and Amiobi. And it's just great to see those three in behind a forward who can all batter defences.
I think his unpredictability at this level is a big thing because, you know, we've not seen a great deal of fancy flair football from most teams, to be honest with you. And to have somebody that unpredictable, that rangy, I think that's a definite bonus. Whether that'll serve, and I said the same to my dad at the weekend watching the game, whether that means if we were to get promoted, Amiobi would become the Amiobi that we thought we were getting is another matter. But I think right here, right now, it is one of the most important players we've got in the team.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a couple, I think it was the Port Vale game, and I wrote up from that that defenders can't know what he's going to do because I don't think he knows half the time. I think he reminds me of Paolo Onechop. He seems to do things and then you realise what he's done after he's done it, rather than him having a specific, right, I'm going to do my man or I'm going to cut inside. I just think he's so instinctive, which you can't mark that.
Yeah. Interesting.
I think... I was just going to make a point there on Amiobi. It's very early on when he came on loan. He'd had a bad game, and I wrote something along the lines of, you know, he's conforming to all these stereotypes, and can he last a game out? Is he going to be a super sub? You know, and I don't think he'll mind me saying, but Parky pulled me in his office and wasn't overly impressed with what I'd written. And he basically said along the lines of, listen, we've got to get this out of him because he's believing this. You know, he's got to, words he uses, he's got to be more demonstrative. He's got to start chasing people down. And he said that once he feels like the fans are behind him a little bit by doing these kind of pointless things, running, you know, chasing down a lost cause or chasing down a goalkeeper and all these things that fans tend to clap that don't really add a great deal to the whole tactical sort of side of the game. Once he gets that confidence, then you'll start seeing more out of him. And I think that happened. He started suddenly becoming a little bit more defensively aware, chasing back, making the odd tackle here and there. But now he's kind of, he's confident enough to be able to do both sides of it. And he's starting to learn a bit more. And as one of you just said before there, certainly on Saturday against Millwall, there was no problem there on that right-hand side. You know, Wilson's communication is excellent, by the way. He does pull him. He's got him on a string. He's telling him exactly what he's doing. But they form quite a nice little partnership there. And there's no weakness there. Whereas when he got into the side originally, both of them were defensively a bit porous. They both improved. And that right-hand side now, which has been a problem side for God knows how long, yes, for Bolton, is actually quite strong.
Yeah, it's mad.
Do you remember Tyrone Mears and Mark Davies? What a right-side partnership they were.
You can believe that as well.
That's interesting. I was about to ask the same. But what sort of bloke is he, Amiobi? Have you had a chance to speak to him, Mark? Is he, you know, because he looks like he's running down the wing and he's thinking about what he's going to have for his tea that night. You know, I have that impression of him that he's so talented, but maybe his mind wanders a little bit. Is that fair?
Yeah, he reminds me a lot of Scholler. His personality is very, very sort of similar. They have got kind of a laid back kind of attitude, very, very intelligent lad. You know, and bizarrely enough, whereas they were both born and raised in Newcastle, Scholler's ended up with, well, I think Scholler moved there when he was very young. Scholler's ended up with this thick Geordie accent, whereas he sounds like he's from Richmond or like middle of London type of thing, like posh London. I don't understand how that's happened, but they are quite, you can see you've got to motivate him. You know, I think left to his own devices, maybe he would kind of, you know, flit in and out of games and be that sort of Amiobi we saw at Cardiff, for example, in the Championship, where he thought you'll have 10 good minutes and then the rest of the game you won't see him for dust. But I think he's got to have a fire underneath his backside. But I think Parkinson's that type of guy. He's a good man manager, and he's taking each player and treating them very, very differently. And he's taking, you know, using a completely unique kind of approach with each lad. And the Amiobi one's a perfect case in point, because I've seen it through from where, you know, he had his concerns, and now he's saying, well, look, this is why we did this, this is why we did this, and he's getting the, reaping the rewards, so, you know, it's good to see.
Would you say Parkinson's like, obviously it seems like he is, so is he a good man manager then? Is he good with how he, you know, talks and gets the confidence into his plays and that? Given it, you know, him giving unique treatment to each player, is that a unique thing, or at least unique for Bolton managers in recent years?
It's not been. I think Coyle was a little bit like that. He was a very sort of affable, friendly coach, Coyle, and he'd be everybody's friend. So when things were going right, everything, you know, he had an arm around each individual player. But we all know what happened when things weren't going right. People tell me, and I didn't work with him, but people tell me that he's very similar. Park is very similar to Bruce Rioch in that, you know, he had this kind of individual approach, and he took a step back and left training pretty much to, you know, his right-hand men and watched things from afar, and then came in when he needed to, and then he'd always be on the periphery to take people aside and give them a word, rather than being the main man like Lennon was, or Coyle to an extent, you know, being part of the, you know, kicking the five sides about and such like. But He's got his own unique style, but I do think that management side is what's seen a few of them through, and I think it's helped a lot of the ones that were scarred from last season, the ones that have come through and were involved in the relegation season. That kind of arm round the shoulder, or that, you know, kick up the backside has really helped, and it's stopped any sort of hangover with most of them, at least.
Yeah. I think many of us have said on different occasions that so many players, so your likes of Spearing, Wita, so many look a lot more rejuvenated this year, and maybe it's just because, you know, it's a lower division, they're playing well, but playing under a manager that I like, I imagine, also helps.
Yeah, I mean, Wait is one of them, you just need to get him out there on a football, but all he wants to do is play. He doesn't want to train particularly, but he wants to play. You know, Spearing is more, you know, your atypical professional, and he's, you know, he does needs to be loved, obviously, but I think he's got enough about him that he doesn't need too much mollycoddling. But there's others in there that really do need help in the long run, and you know, certainly the younger ones. And it's been interesting to see the way they've taken different approaches with each one and managed so far. That you couldn't tell me that there's many players, many that are completely out of form in the squad at the minute, and that's not a bad going considering.
Yeah. On a quick aside from the game, we was on about how well Sammy's been playing recently. Why do you think it's not really gone well for James Henry at Bolton so far?
Those misses, I think, just got to him a bit. I think he's a better player than that. I do think, given time, he'll turn. But I just think that kind of series of games, the Walsall game in particular, where he just, you know, some real bad ones. And there was a little bit of, you know, annoyance within the crowd. And I think he just let that get to him a little bit. But obviously, Amiobi's form has been the main one that's kept him out. Or else, otherwise, he would have been in the team before that.
Yeah, undoubtedly. So going back to the Millwall game. Jimmy, was there any players that impressed you on Saturday that we are yet to discuss?
To be fair, I thought Derek had a slow start, but he grew in. I was a bit nervous about him playing at the back again. He didn't have a great deal to do, but he stepped out with the ball. He always found a white shirt. Thorpe was fantastic when he came on. I don't think Trotter did a lot wrong, to be fair, but I thought we looked a better team with Thorpe in there. And again, Taylor was the standout because, as much as I've enjoyed him, I thought, yeah, he's a steady defender and he's an improvement over Moxie. I think, like Mark's just said, with Amiobi and Wilson on the right, I think Taylor and Clough really, really clicked at weekend. He bombed on past Clough when Clough stepped inside, but he always seemed to get back. I don't think he's the quickest, but he just seemed to get there. And I just think that's a case of a good player getting comfortable with his teammates. But I can't really pick anyone out. I think I gave Taylor the man of the match just because, like, he was the biggest surprise over Vela. I think Vela's been playing well for a few weeks. But no, I thought they were all superb. I thought it was a brilliant team performance. Yeah.
You mentioned Derek and Thorpe there. So Derek obviously played in defence in that game. I think it's his first game there for quite a while. But presuming when Wheaters fit and Beavers are fit, they're the first choice. And then we have a position alongside Spearing in the midfield. Who's better there, Thorpe or Derek? What do you reckon, Jimmy?
I think it's a nice problem to have, and one we've not had for a long time. Mm-hmm. I think, to be fair, my gut would always be to go safety first and go Thorpe. I don't think he'll offer quite as much on the ball going forward, but I still get the feeling with Derek there's a mistake in him. And I don't think there is with Thorpe. I've said that now, we'll probably score an own goal tomorrow. But, I think, certainly in the bigger games where it is more safety first, I'd definitely go with Thorpe. I think if it's a game at home against the team where we can maybe take a bit of a chance, then I'd go Derek, just because I think he offers a bit more in terms of vision. But now I think at the minute it'd be Thorpe for me.
What's your opinion, Chris?
Yeah, I see where Jimmy's coming from, but I don't think you get anywhere by being cautious. So I would always maybe go with Derek in midfield. I thought it was interesting to note how small Derek looked at weekend next to Beavers. I didn't realise quite how big Beavers was. He was the man that also impressed me, by the way. I know he didn't get mentioned then, but maybe that's because we're so used to him being really good.
Oh, yeah. Perhaps, it goes without saying.
I think that's what I said in my article today, that it's no surprise now that Beavers is an 8 out of 10. He's been fantastic signing, perhaps the best one we've made in a good couple of years. But Thorpe has got his own merits. I think him and Derek are quite similar in terms of their physicality. I don't see Thorpe necessarily being a one to put in a crunching tackle, but given his upbringing at United, he's just as comfortable on the ball as Derek. And so, yeah, I think you couldn't really go much wrong with either player. There's one final thing, Mark, I just wanted to just mention about Amiobi that I didn't quite get a chance to fit in there. With his contract ending at Christmas, do you know if anything's been said yet about extending it? I mean, Newcastle are flying, they clearly don't need him. He's playing every week with Bolton, surely it's a no-brainer that he signs on.
Yeah, I mean, they've asked the question. What, of course, is always the case with the loan players is when they start doing well and they start getting decent headlines, then all of a sudden the club that own them start charging more or start, you know, thinking they can get him playing at a higher level. So I think Newcastle have been a little bit canny, and they've not just said yes straight away. But I think it will come down to perhaps the player and how, you know, wanted he feels and how much he wants to stay on. Now, speaking to Sammy in the few times I have done, he really is happy where he is. He's living in a hotel still. He hasn't sort of bought a house or anything daft like that. But he is looking at laying down roots if he can do. So I think it's fairly promising, but obviously, good. You know, a lot can go on.
Fair enough, brilliant. Oh, well, back to what I should have said, Dan. Wilson, I thought Laurie was good at the weekend as well. He's been another sort of six and a half out of ten performer for me during his time at Bolton. But I thought he had an excellent game that weekend.
Tom was right.
Yeah, well, obviously he played a long game, didn't he?
No, he did.
He was correct. And I was really impressed by Wilson. I thought he had an excellent game, as they all did. I mean, Trotter, Bar a blooming daft tackle right in front of me that on another day might have had a more harsh punishment. Didn't do much wrong himself either, but the same goes for all of them. The only one I wanted to slightly debate with Mr. Donnelly was Medine. The benefit of us being in League One means you can get mobile phone signal in the ground these days. I tweeted out that I was a bit surprised he got a standing ovation, to which I was immediately challenged by a certain Mr. Donnelly, like, what the hell are you talking about? I just wanted to know if you wanted to bring that discussion perhaps to the old podcasting game, mate. Do you want to let me know where you were coming from, and I'll retort in my own way?
Yeah, I think part of the reason Vela, Clough and Amiobi are doing so well is that Medine, granted at times he is rather Bambi on ice, but he tends to take two defenders with him. Whatever he does, there's two men on him. And that then creates all that space. And I think if you were to sacrifice him for the sake of argument, an Adam Lafondre figure, would the three in behind him get as much room to do what they do? I just think he's playing that system, that one up front, the three behind. It's not often you get a one there who does everything, i.e. take men out the game, win free kicks, and score a lot of goals. And I just thought on Saturday, even the people around me who tend to love a good winch, even they were stood up clapping him. Because again, he didn't get a sniff of goal, but he made a lot of room. He did all the donkey work for the likes of Amiobi to step in and get the headlines. I thought it was fantastic at weekend. I think he's that knackered when a chance does fall his way that it doesn't work for him. And I don't think he's ever going to score a lot of goals. He's got four, I think, for the season. Just before he got injured, he was scored a few in a few games. But I think in our system, I just don't think it suits a out-and-out number nine. But Saturday, I just thought his work rate was phenomenal, which I know it's the least you can ask, but I thought he made a lot happen.
No, fair enough. I agree with you and see where you're coming from in terms of how he fits into our system. I just can't help thinking that I need a bit more strikerish behaviour from my main striker. I accept fully that he's not necessarily playing as a striker despite where he lines up on a pitch, and that point you've made about the way he might be physically able to respond to chances given the efforts he's put in is another matter altogether. I worry about how long a team's luck can go without spreading the goals around as much as we have been doing, really. I mean, he's on no goals in 11, I think, now, Medine. I mean, Proctor, as the alternative, is no alternative. He's none in 17, I think I read the other day. Mm-hmm. So we're stuck with him, come what may. There's no issue with that there. I just maybe like to see him be a bit more selfish, perhaps, you know. It's a good thing that he's so team-orientated, obviously, and he's bringing others into play, the likes of Vela, etc., benefiting from that. I just fancy that I want my centre-forward to be a centre-forward, and that's perhaps where I would like him to change. And I reserve my standing ovations for more than a bit of effort, I'm afraid. I mean, I've given him in the past. Kevin Davies has been the recipient of many a standing ovation for a load of donkey work and no goals. Perhaps I'm just getting a bit less generous in my old age, I don't know. What do you think, Mark, on that front with Medine? I know he's obviously a hard-working forward doing a thankless task, but where would you stand on that debate? Or do you have a third opinion, perhaps?
Well, no, I would be leaning towards Jimmy's opinion, if I'm honest. I would like to see Gaz be a bit stronger in certain situations. I think he looks for free kicks a bit too often, which, you know, sometimes if you're winning them, that's all well and good. But I think League One referees seem to be getting wise to it, and he's not getting decisions that he probably should get at times simply because he's flounced to the floor a couple of minutes before. But no, I don't think he's going to get a lot of goals. I don't think it's absolutely necessary, though. I think a few people are saying, you know, we're never going to go up without having a 20-goal-a-season striker. I don't think that's necessarily true, because if you've got those three players who are going to get in double figures, for me, easily, behind them, why do you need it? I remember Hull going up a few years ago in the Championship, and their top scorer was on something like 8 or 9 goals, and it was all about the wide men behind and chipping in from midfield. I think that can happen with Bolton. I know they are looking for a striker, by the way, in January. I know they are looking for somebody, but I just think that the way that it's set up at the minute, it's so tailor made for the three behind them. And Medin's doing a decent job there, and Procky could do as well, but he's not quite as good in the air. That's the main problem. He's probably a bit more mobile and can run the channels a bit better. But I think Gaz is doing a decent job for me there. I wouldn't change it.
We literally can't change it at the minute, really, can we? Because I should say Proctor. I thought Proctor was good when he first came in, but you know, who did he do that miss against? When it was literally, was it Bury maybe? He literally missed from about 3 yards. Yeah. It's like, he's not helping himself, is he? But is there...
I live and work in Preston, and I spoke to a few of their fans before, when he signed for us, and the majority of them were of the opinion that he's actually a better as an attacking midfielder rather than, you know, giving him the number 9 shirt and trusting him up top. And I mean, his career goals record perhaps bears that out. Mark, I know he scored a few goals for Bradford, didn't he, under Parkinson? But do you think maybe some merit in that he's not necessarily that number 9 perhaps that you might expect?
Yeah, I think he's played wide right for a decent chunk of his Bradford time. He didn't play for Bradford for that long, but I think he played the right hand side of, with Hansen being the main man up front for Bradford, and Proctor coming from one of the wider areas. But I think he's got a role there, and I think he is a decent player. I think he's a good backup for Medin. I think in January I'd like to see them add something a little bit different to the two of them, so that they had I don't think Keshi Anderson's quite shown me personally that he's ready and able to add in something different up front. So you're kind of lacking that one different type of central striker. But as far as Proctor goes, I think he's got a role in the team, and he's never going to let you down for effort either. And you know, it might be the least you require from a player, but you know, we've seen enough not chip in at Bolton in the last few years. I think it's nice to have one that you know you're just going to be able to throw in and you're going to get 100% from.
Well, shall we move on to the coming matches in this week then? Is there any other thing, anything else anyone wants to say about Saturday's game? No? Well,
no, pretty happy. We've covered most. I was one final thing, sorry, that just come to mind now. I was happy that Ben Anik in goal, he had a bit of a shaky game against Peterborough, didn't he? And he came just in for a bit of grief off people. But I thought he did everything that he could have done on Saturday. Granted, he didn't have that much to do. But I don't remember him making a single thing that you could perhaps describe as a mistake or something to give you concern.
I'll tell you something about that, actually. On the Peterborough game, a few of us kind of mentioned the fact that his kicking was poor and he was looking, it just looked off, it looked rusty to me. Yeah. But speaking at the training ground today, and a few of them were saying that they've changed the way they're going to do things before the game a bit, is that he'd done such a heavy warm-up on the, you know, warming Howard up in the game before the game, that he actually felt a bit knackered when he turned up on the pitch. Yeah. So he actually went into the game feeling a bit leggy type of thing. So I think that's actually made them change a little bit of the warm up routine and the way that they're going to be looking to do things from here on in, just in case it happens again. Sometimes they carry three goalkeepers. Sometimes they don't, so I think they'll probably be bringing a spare between now and the rest of the season.
Interesting. Well, moving on to this week's matches. We play Coventry tomorrow, which completely snuck up on me. I had no idea. And then we play Northampton on Saturday. So starting with the Coventry game, Mark, you obviously went to the training ground today and talked to the manager and whatnot. So what's your feelings going into this game, you know, with the dishevelled Coventry?
They're a funny side, aren't they? They've got Mr. Sordell up front.
Yeah,
he's got 6 goals from this season, which is a decent return considering. They're a young side, very young side. They've lost Sam Ricketts as well. Now he's had to retire with a knee injury, which is very sad news. You know, he was a cracking lad. I really enjoyed working with him. But, yeah. They are, for me, very up and down at Oxford at the weekend. So even Phil Parkinson, who's watched him kind of three times in the last three games, doesn't really know what he's going to be coming up against. So I think it's how they deal with Sordell first and foremost, and then and what the rest of the team put in.
Mm-hmm. I was talking to a commentary fan I know who said that apparently Andy Rose, one of Coventry's most important players, might be a doubt for tomorrow. Which would
yes, he's out. Yeah,
yeah, out completely. So that's obviously another boost for us after fingers in. Wherever Millwall strike went off on Saturday, so we're getting the rub of the green fringes for once. So, Chris, how do you see the game going tomorrow?
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as much as you possibly can. A midweek game in the back end of November when it's been chucking it down for the best part of 2 days at the Reebok. As I wrote in my preview that I posted today, I really fancy us. I know they're in shocking form. Comparatively, they started the season off with no wins in 10, which I didn't quite realise. And granted, since Mark Venus came in, they've actually improved a little bit. They've won 4 out of 8. As Mark said, they're coming into the game after getting spanked against Oxford United. So they're obviously a team with suffering from problems on and off the pitch. I've got an article going up in the morning about how they've struggled under this Sisu, or Sisu the call, I think, the owners that have been in since 2007. And if you think that Bolton have had it bad in the last few years, I didn't realise just quite how bad Coventry have had it bad. They're a fifth consecutive season in this league as well. And the 19th, I think, or 8th.
They've not finished in the top 6.
Sorry?
They've not finished in the top 6 of any division for about 47 years or something.
So there you go. Their slump is everlasting, it seems. So I do fancy us, and I find that their problems, with Rose especially being out injured, is going to be a big one for them. Though Sordell might have scored more goals this season than he scored in his entire Bolton career, they seem to be pretty one-dimensional in that if Sordell doesn't score, I think their next best goal scorer is on maybe 2 or 3 when I was scouring Wikipedia when I should have been working this morning. So I do fancy us. I think we've got enough about us, and at home especially as well, I still fancy it'll be a fairly intimidating place for teams to play. And I wouldn't be surprised if we were to come out maybe 3 or 4 nil winners. I'm quite content with that, I think.
Yeah, I feel like we're looking alright. I know our home form is really good. Have we even lost at home this season?
Oxford.
Was that at home? Bloody hell, yeah. That's my...
Yeah, believe me, it was.
2-0, yeah.
Yeah. You know what? So apart from that, yeah, it was... Oh, man, we lost 2-0 to them. How the hell did it happen? So aside from that one blemish, I've been quite good at home. I can't... Well, hopefully can't see it continue, not continuing tomorrow. And then on Saturday, a team who are quite different in terms of the fortunes this year, Northampton Town, they're going, well, at least they were last time I checked, they're doing pretty good. Matt Taylor there seems to be scoring free kicks every time I see them on Saturday or something. So, Mark, how do you see that one going? It's a bit of a longer trip, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I've not been to Northampton for quite a few years, actually. I think they've still... Frankie Benny's in behind the ground is the best thing I can say about that one. It's a horrible place to work. Yeah, I mean, they absolutely stormed it last season, didn't they? My Nicky Adams was playing from last year, and he said, you know, the role they went on was just absolutely incredible. But they've obviously adjusted fairly well, haven't they? So
especially since they lost the manager.
Yeah, exactly. So it's I mean, they're an atypical League One side. I think it's another. They're all much for muchness. There's not been anybody in this league so far that's impressed me particularly, or had me worrying. Now, I think Sheffield United and well, certainly Sheffield United. I've not seen much of Scunthorpe in all fairness, but certainly Sheffield. They're starting to look like a side now, Sheffield United, but. I don't think there's much in this division that you need to be particularly concerned about as if you're a Bolton team. You've just got to make sure that level of consistency is there and they'll be okay.
Mm-hmm. Chris, I remember the last time, at least I think the last time we played Northampton, was in the Cup when we lost to them at home. Mark Bunn.
Oh, yeah, Gaz Cahill got sent off, didn't he?
Was it really? I Yeah. I can't remember. All I remember was that Mark Bunn, who went on to play for Norwich and Villa, might be at Villa still, had the best game definitely of his life. He was amazing.
Akin Senwa was playing from as well.
Correct, yeah, he was. Yeah,
I remember Danny Shittu, he just scored an own goal. I had a really bad mistake that cost us the game, I seem to recall. But Mark, much of a muchness seems to sum Northampton up. I've done a little bit of reading up on him this morning, planning what I'm going to write. They're on 6 wins, 6 draws, I think, and 6 defeats from their 18 games. So much of a muchness pretty much covers it. I think the goal difference is more or less zero as well. So it seems like you don't really know what you're going to get from them. Now, I can't say I've ever been to Northampton to watch us, and I won't be going at weekend. I've got far too much decorating to do. But it's one of those games, isn't it, where if we're going to be hoping to get promotion, we've really got to go there and win. I think they lost their last 2 games, if I remember rightly. They lost against Peterborough and Gillingham after beating Bury, but everyone beats Bury. So hopefully we can come into the game with our form, having been 6 points from the last two, and them having 0 from their last two as well. I fancy us in this league. I think we've got to go into every game looking focused. However, they're playing Bradford away tomorrow night, so we could maybe hope for a draw, perhaps, on that front, just to boost our chances and to hinder Bradford's a bit. Scunthorpe, I'm a bit less confident on, as I am with Sheffield United. I think Scunthorpe are... The benefiting from, is it Morris, is he called, the striker?
Yeah, he's got 16 goals already.
That's right, yeah, I mean, he's on a career best. I didn't know that. A career best streak, and those sort of things don't tend to last.
He's been linked with Birmingham today, so, in the January window.
Is he really?
Yeah, so.
Yeah, we see, that might unsettle them perhaps a little bit as well. But Sheffield United, yeah, I think their time's come, hasn't it? Wilder showed last year what a good manager he is, and obviously disappointed not to get him. That tempered a little bit with what we've done under Parkinson so far, but they're a decent club who I think most people could probably contend should be playing at a higher level. And it just goes to show our victory over them on the first day of the season was an impressive start. So Northampton in my mind, yeah, I think we'll get the 3 points. In the long term,
I think the big advantage the other teams have got is they all seem to have an out-and-out goal scorer, whereas, as we already discussed, we've got kind of the three behind the one. But I think the top four is kind of breaking away a bit now. I mean, I'm still of a nervous disposition. I'm still looking at seventh or eighth, the last playoff place, and seeing that we're 7 or 8 points clear of it. And I'm still kind of looking at that at the minute, because I think I'd have bitten your hand off for a playoff place. So I'm still kind of looking that way, but I still think we've only really played well in 2 games and we're up where we are, and we had that horrible month where we couldn't hit a barn door and couldn't buy a point, and we're still up there. So I kind of think we can get better. I don't know if they can. I think they're probably playing at their maximum, Sheffield United and Scunthorpe. So I'm getting there. I think January is massive. If we can keep all the players, maybe bring one, maybe two in, then I think we're good enough. I think we're the best team in that division when we get it right. We just need to avoid too many Peterboroughs.
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing that's coming up either this week or next week, I'm not quite sure, is the Q&A with the chairman. Now, Mark, this looks like it may be interesting.
It does. It's Wednesday night, actually.
Is it? I thought it was. I couldn't remember. I didn't want to stake my claim to something I was not 100% sure on. But yeah, this Wednesday.
I think it starts at 7:30. All fans invited. It's interesting. I just think it's whether it's brave, foolhardy, don't know. Can't make my mind up. with the accounts not being filed and all the, you know, the hoo-ha about that, and all the questions that remain unanswered on that front, it just seems like a really, really strange time to be saying, well, come on, guys, come in and ask me as many questions as you like, because you've got to be very, very sure of what you're saying. Now, it says to me that either there's some good news that's going to be released in the next couple of days, I'm not saying that because I know it, but I'm just thinking aloud, or that he, you know, quite literally is brave enough to answer any questions that come his way, because I think you've got to look at not only the fact that the accounts haven't been filed despite a couple of different reasons being offered and different kind of deadlines being set, but there's things like the embargo, which is very much up in the air, and there's a lot of different theories flying around this thing, you know, relationship with Dean Holdsworth, which, you know, how much is that causing an issue with you know, I know it certainly is causing an issue, but for him to come out and say in public to supporters how constructive or destructive that might be, I'm not too sure. And, you know, there's various other kind of financial stuff knocking around the club that I just wonder how, whether it's a wise move or not, if I'm honest. And that's as a journalist who's going to be writing about everything that gets said there that night. You know, obviously it's quite good. It's meat and drink for people like me. But looking sort of completely down the middle, I just wonder how wise it is.
Yeah, I respect him massively for doing it, and it's certainly going to be interesting. I mean, you know, we all wanted openness and, you know, clearness, whatever. You know, we all wanted, when we was clamouring for new owners way back when, that we just wanted them to be open with us. We wanted them to have a dialogue, keep us informed, not, you know, not just keep us in the dark, having no idea what the hell's happening. So for him to, I should say, be brave enough to go and face the wolves and answer questions coming his way, I respect it for it. My worry would be, and, you know, going into it, my kind of worry is that how much is he actually going to answer? Is it just going to be a lot of, you know, how media, you know, how interviews are done these days? It's just all very nothing statements just to, you know, get the question answered. Hopefully he is as candid as we would like to think he'd be, and he'll answer questions honestly or as much as he can. And we'll get some answers on some questions which some valid concerns still remain about.
I just wonder what we can actually benefit from it, or whether it's just going to cause more problems. I mean, great if he stands up there and gives you truth and chapter and verse about the accounts, that's one thing, but if it's bad news, he's only going to then be asked, well, what are you going to do about it? And then if he won't answer that question, I fear that something like that could end up coming and causing more unrest in the stands, you know. Not saying that there's a mutiny or anything like that, but people are asking questions, where are the accounts and why are we not seeing them yet? And if it's bad news, then that just leads to more and more complicated questions that maybe got answers that he won't be comfortable giving. So whilst I respect the fact that he's prepared to stand up there and be spoken to and answer these questions, I just wonder whether it's going to open a big old can of worms.
What do you think, Joe?
Yeah, I think obviously he's got a bit of a checkered past, to put it lightly, but he's certainly not daft. And I can't imagine for one second why anyone in his position would put themselves up there to be shot at unless he's got a hell of a big shield to deflect it with. So either he's got a patsy there to take all the bad news for him, i.e. maybe Dino, or he's got something very nice to reveal, which is going to completely take the sting out of any pre-prepared negativity. There's got to be, I can't see how he wins from it unless he has got some good news. And I don't think he or anyone in that position would go into that without a win in the pocket. So I just hope I can get there from work. But there's got to be something there. He's got to have something to reveal, because I don't know where the hell you'd do it otherwise.
Yeah, how do you see it going, Mark? Do you think it is a good thing or a bad thing? And obviously it's great for you because, you know, weeks worth of stories on one night, you'd hope, but how do you see it going?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, this kind of issue of kind of transparency and such like from the top, I want to say absolutely on the record that Ken Anderson's been fine with us, no problem at all. You know, if you ask him a question, it might not always be on the record, but there's a kind of a level of communication that you don't necessarily see because of the general public. But, you know, there has been information coming from the club. There's not been any problem with that. And same with Dean. Same thing. They've both been fine. We know where they stand. Getting those comments on the record sometimes is difficult, and they can't talk about certain information. And a lot of that has been, about the finances and about the reasons for not putting stuff, putting the accounts in. I just wonder, has something changed? You know, does makes that all of a sudden okay to talk about. And as a couple of people have touched on there, you know, what happens if something gets said, even in the heat of the moment, that people don't like, and all of a sudden it sets it off. I just think things are going so well on the pitch at the moment. I just have this horrible nightmare of having to write that story that all of a sudden tips it back in the opposite direction again. And it all starts, everything starts unraveling, and then we get right back to where we were at the start of the year. But I mean, I'm sure, I'm fingers crossed, everything's fine. And to be honest, you know, everybody behind the scenes is fairly comfortable with things. So I just hope it goes that way.
Well,
how do you think the communication differs, Mark, to what it was under the Davies Algarside regime? Is it completely different? Do you still get stonewalled sometimes with some nondescript answers, or is it better?
Yeah, I mean, you're never going to get everything you want, certainly in this job, and fans are never going to get every single bit of information they want. It just doesn't work that way, unfortunately. It's a business, isn't it? But I mean, going back to the Davies time, Eddie Davies didn't want to talk, full stop. He didn't want to speak to the paper. I asked a million and one times to speak to him, never happened. He wanted Phil Gartside to be his front at the time, and Phil Gartside, we could probably devote a whole podcast to the hows, whys and wherefores of what he did, but ultimately his emotions ruled the roost. Sometimes he'd be fantastic, sometimes he would be absolutely impossible to work with, and one thing is for sure, it's that the communication from the football club was dictated by the relationships he had within that football club. People did not want to give out information and be seen to be the people giving information to the paper or to the fans, in the fear that they would get in trouble, there'd be reprisals. And that affected the whole lot, and the whole club froze up in a sense. So in that respect, I can walk in now and I hope that comes across in the way that we write and the way we're covering the club. I can walk in now and ask questions of anybody and get a reasonable answer. It might not be the best answer you could possibly get, but it's there. There is a communication, there is a dialogue on most subjects, and I think that's a huge step forward.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, we're finally... It's just nice to know that our club's a bit more open than it was, you know, because it's just nice, and it must make your job easier for one as well. But that's, my friends, is the end of the Line of Sweet Pod. Yeah, oh, man, I'd be so shit today. Bloody hell, apologies. That, my friends, is the end of the Line of Vienna Sweet Podcast, episode 67. Thank you very much for listening to us. If you want to catch more of our words and whatnot, well, there's three websites on display today. You go over to lineofviennasuite.com, the best one of them all. Lol. for Chris, Tom, and so many other people's words. Of course, Jim, do you want to go and plug yours?
Yeah, Trotters Blog. We're on Twitter, at Trotters Blog. I try and put something up once a week, and I usually do the rating, so there should be something up after the game tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm. And what about your Twitter? Where can people follow you, Jim?
We're at Trotters Blog on Twitter. My personal one is at JimWire84. I tend to do more talking through that one because Liam doesn't trust me with the official.
And Mark, you don't really need to plug your website, really, do you?
No, don't worry. Don't go on, it's rubbish.
It's good, it gets all the
stuff. Too many ads.
You're going to go over to, of course, the Bolton News, you know where it is, buy the paper, click the ads. And of course, follow Mark on Twitter at Mark Isles. Get me on Twitter at Mabruski. You can get Chris on Twitter at 19Manning83. Get Line of Vienna on Twitter at Line of Vienna Steve. And as a quick aside, we didn't win in the FBAs, alas, because fucking Scousers and I think it was a Leeds blog won instead. But thank you all very much for those who voted. It's always very nice to get your name in there. On the little list, and we were on top of the little list as well, so that was cool. So thanks very much for your support, and hopefully, maybe next year. But if there's nothing left to say, it's time to say goodbye. So say goodbye, Jim.
Say goodnight. Thanks for having us.
Say goodbye, Chris.
Goodbye, Chris.
Always one day. Okay. Say goodbye, Mark.
See you later, guys.
All right, it's goodbye for me. C'est la vie.